Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I am your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to be with you. Very excited about spring. We are in spring, and I love it. It's not as good as summer, but at least it's not like a recent show where I said whatever was my third favorite season. I confuse people with statements like that. We've got a great show for you this week. I want to kick off by telling you about our inbox coming up, which is going to be, of course, with one of our counselors. This will be with Glenn Lutyens, and he's going to talk about this poor girl who is a pastor's daughter and feels like she's basically heading towards being undateable because everyone's just intimidated by her dad and she doesn't stand a chance having a guy step up and be willing to kind of enter the fray with her on that. So hopefully Glenn will have some encouragement for her. And then in our culture segment, we have Tim Willard. He is the author of Veneer, and a really interesting story that he tells us in the interview about growing up in a church, having a lot of church problems. His dad was actually kicked out of a church, and really that caused him to leave the church, big C, for a big season of time. And he tells his story of coming back to that and understanding God's grace in the midst of all that. For our roundtable, I've got a great group of folks here at the table with me, and I want to introduce them very quickly. Scott is with us. Scott Welch, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Appreciate it. Evan Nelson. Evan, welcome.
Thank you.
I've got three newbies here. Christy Lynn.
Hey.
Christy's here. Hey. Oh, my goodness. We're just pulling more and more people into this show.
It's all
and
good.
And, of course, yeah. And then they tell their friends, and then we become a worldwide phenomenon.
So wow, there's a lot of pressure on us.
It is. Don't think that I won't be checking your Facebook pages to make sure you're telling people about this. That's just how we roll. So, but we are going to talk. Many of you probably remember a while back, we did a show with a bunch of missionary kids and heard their experiences and how that has shaped who they are today. We're doing the same with pastors' kids today. PKs. Whoop, whoop. So shout for the PKs.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly when it comes to growing up in the church, as part of the church, when your dad is kind of the central focus of the fishbowl, criticism and adulation. I think it kind of goes both ways. You know, there are the pedestals and there are the valleys that you definitely have to work through. So, so let's just kind of kick off the discussion. We're all kind of from different experiences. We were talking about that before we started taping. But what would you say? I mean, do you feel like being a PK is just kind of part of your experience growing up? Or does it really, do you see some very big distinctives between yourself and your peers, in especially now as you look back on that experience growing up?
That's an interesting question. I think it was just the only experience I ever had. Mm-hmm. My dad didn't do anything else professionally. He started right out of college going to seminary, and he was always a preacher. We were a pastor's family, and that's the life I knew. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see it as really that much different than most others. I did compare notes with other students in school, mm-hmm. and I felt different, but mm-hmm. I think I was putting pressure on myself that way. Nobody else was really putting that pressure on me.
Yeah. Was it generally accepted by your peers? Like, pastor, you know, being a pastor was okay, or was it kind of like, oh, you're the holy rollers?
I don't remember people talking to me. Maybe I just have selective memory, but I don't remember people talking about me being a PK that much.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, I don't think I was picked on very much for that, but I felt like I was going to be, or it was almost like at times I wanted to hide the fact that I was a PK. I didn't want that to stand out as to who I was. So
sure.
But no, I had a pretty normal life.
Okay.
No, I would agree. I mean, I don't remember there ever being a time where people picked on me or said, you know, you're one of those preacher's kids. You know, I loved it. And I feel like I had a fairly normal childhood. I mean, there was definitely times, though, when you would go into a situation and, you know, people would ask what your parents would do. And as soon as they found out that your dad was a pastor, it normally wasn't other students. It normally was their parents, or their parents would treat me different. The kids never did. Mm-hmm. It was usually the adults mm-hmm. who would treat me different, not the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for us, it was, and for myself, it's probably much like a military family. We moved around a lot. And so that was probably the biggest difference, is the fact that you were always the new kid on the block. And but other than that, you know, I loved my dad being a pastor and learned so much from him and just his work ethic and everything. So it was normal, except for the moving around and having to meet new friends everywhere you go.
Yeah. I think my dad, and I was sharing with you guys how my dad didn't really pastor churches from the time I was about two on, but he did a lot of filling in of pulpits, and he was just a natural evangelist. And so that's really what I noticed with our neighbors was, you know, when I would go over, kind of like what Evan said, I'd go over to a friend's house and immediately, like, the language would stop, the liquor was put away. You know, it was kind of like, what's Lisa going to report back to her parents, and are they going to come and hit us, you know, with a King James Bible or something like that? So I kind of felt there was some of that element in that way, I guess. But so would you say, you know, kind of what, Christy, you talked a lot about moving around. Were the rest of you, were you guys kind of stable, or did you move into different localities?
My dad was at his church for 25 years.
Wow, how did that happen?
He was, well, that was not easy. That's a whole nother broadcast, actually.
Yeah. Wow, my goodness. Yeah,
he stuck it out because he really wrestled, I don't know, 10, 15 years into that, he wrestled with whether or not to stay. Mm-hmm. And he stuck it out, and I would say most wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult, but, you know, we had a good church family that really was good to us.
So when you're saying he stuck it out, were there problems in the church and he really did stick it out?
It was a small church.
Okay.
So when you run between 125 to 300 probably at its height, while he was there.
Yeah, he probably wasn't pulling in six figures or doing,
oh,
you know,
exactly. I mean, you have very little staff, and so he did almost everything with the church. And so sometimes you had support from people helping to do different functions of the church. Other times you felt like you were doing it all yourself. So that's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he carried it, and he probably carried too much. And I think eventually it killed him, unfortunately. Mm. But because he had heart disease. Okay. And I think the stress of leading the church had a lot to do with that. So my mom, I think, at different points thought that, you know, it's time that you should move on. You should just shouldn't be carrying this pressure. Mm-hmm. And he called two evangelist friends of his that he had known over the years, and he asked them, what should I do? Do you think I should stay or should I go? One told him to stay, one told him to go. He ended up staying. So, mm-hmm. There was a lot of pressure. There was a church split when I was about 12 years old, and there was a decision that the church voted on whether to keep the youth pastor or to keep the senior pastor. My dad. Hmm. And they voted to keep my dad. The church split in half. Hmm. And it was healthier after that. And things were better. But it was still a struggle for him to, you know, get people to help with the things of the church, to visit. And it was just a struggle throughout his ministry.
Don't all problems just start with the youth pastor? That's what I'd like to say.
No, I wouldn't say that.
I have to say that for Evan's benefit, because that's what he's in. He's in youth work now.
Our church was small enough. We rarely had a youth pastor.
I'm surprised your dad was in the youth pastor in addition to, everybody.
Well, you mentioned a small church, and I mean, when I think small, I think of the church that I grew up in, and there was probably on a good day, good Sunday, 50 people. Mm-hmm. So it's funny, when I think of youth pastors, I mean, my dad was a youth pastor. My dad was, he led the music, he preached. I mean, anything that happened within the church, it was him.
Mm-hmm.
And which we pretty much lived there. We folded the bulletins, we stuffed them.
My mom proofs them.
Yeah, exactly.
My dad used the mimeograph machine.
Exactly. Oh, my word. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. We had that upstairs, yeah.
But I just remember growing up, I was at the church a lot. I was homeschooled as well. And so my dad was my teacher. Hmm. For school, my preacher, and then he also taught the Sunday school class I was in.
Wow.
So I got a lot of my dad. And I loved it. I mean, looking back, I think it was great. But we spent a lot of time at the church. I mean, just great memories of my siblings and I just running rampant in that building. If those walls could talk.
Yeah.
I'm glad they can't. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, I played in the baptistry, and I jumped over pews and under pews. I mean, it was just fun. Mm-hmm. For me, I was born in North Carolina, and then my dad did home missionary work as a new church planner in Iowa and Illinois, and then he had three pastorates in Missouri, and then in Tennessee. and then I was married off, and I didn't have to have that world anymore. But yeah, so we were in different places a lot.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about expectations, because I think there is kind of this expectation of PKs on a number of levels, whether it's from outside folks or whether it's from yourself. And, you know, we're always battling against the... you know, I guess the allure or the temptation to manage our sin, to perform, to be something that we're not. How did you feel that played out as you grew up, especially as you moved into your teenage years? And did you end up, what was that pivotal point where you really ended up owning your own faith beyond, I mean, was there any rebellion? Did you guys kind of just come to a realization of this really, my faith is my own, this isn't just my home experience? How did that play out for y'all?
Well, for me, being in a small church, especially when I got a little older, I was involved in music. I loved music. And matter of fact, music's been a huge part of my life for many, many years. And there wasn't adult leadership to step up to the microphone and lead worship. So when I was 15 or 16, I found myself doing that. And so literally my piano lessons became, what are you playing on Sunday? Mm-hmm. And just trying to make sure the offertory hymn sounded decent. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the biggest expectation level that I was like, whoa, don't want that. but other than that, you know, you get the, you know, people normally treated you halfway decent after that. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a couple of fishbowl moments, but that was pretty much it.
I didn't go through any strong rebellion at home, but again, as I said earlier, I put pressure on myself to want to fit in because I felt like I was different because my dad was a pastor and people knew that my dad was a pastor. So I did feel like I was in the fishbowl to some degree for that reason, and I wanted to be known for something besides being the pastor's son. And so I tried to fit in, as you do with your peers. Typically, as a teenager, you want to be accepted, you want to be loved, appreciated for something. And so I tried to do the things that I enjoyed: drama, music, sports, and just try to be accepted by people and not looked at as, well, you're just the PK. But I never really strayed too far. Actually, I think you ask a question about, when did your faith become your own? Mm-hmm. To me, I felt like my faith was becoming my own at about 10 years old. Mm. That doesn't mean that the growth pattern was all on the upward trend, but I never strayed very far from what I knew to be true. Mm. You know, I might have pretended to be a little bit different mm-hmm. at times, mm-hmm. but I really did believe very firmly and did own my own faith mm-hmm. at a young age. And that got a lot stronger when I got to college.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting in my own life because what ended up happening to me was, you know, I grew up in this Christian home. I grew up going to church all the time. You know, the youth group, small church, so the youth group is me and my brother. And then what ended up happening to me was taking the teachings and the perspectives of other people, what ended up happening was when I got to the college age, that's when I started rebelling because mm-hmm. I was out of the house mm-hmm. and I knew that people had certain expectations of me. You're a preacher's kid. You're supposed to act this certain way. The problem was is that I continued to act those certain ways in public, mm-hmm. but not in my private life. Mm-hmm. I knew those things to be true, but I wasn't owning my faith yet. It wasn't mine personally. It was still my family's faith. It was mm-hmm. still. Now, if you would have asked me that at the time, I would have said, "No, it's not. I'm a Christian. Yeah. I got saved. I was baptized. This is all me." But I was. I mean, when I was in college age, I was going to parties and I was living the life of sin. Mm-hmm. I hid it from everybody. Mm. And looking back, I think the reason why I did that was based off of, I'm a preacher's kid. I'm supposed to be good. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm supposed mm-hmm. to do. I'm not supposed to struggle with any of these normal things that, normal college-age students struggle with.
Yeah.
I'm a good kid. Come on, people.
And I think I had that experience, too, because I was always the good kid, in the exterior, too. And I'm a very strong personality, so it was like I was not going to bend to peer pressure. I knew what was right and what was wrong. I was the one who was openly defiant to my parents. Like, my dad and I just argued entirely through junior high and high school. I spent 8 years arguing with my dad about mostly Christian rock and a number of other really irrelevant topics. So, but I remember just having this feeling that I always had to be the good soldier. I was always the one who had to go to these youth group events that were totally lame, or we were always part of some small church or starting a church plant. So we were the four kids from the youth group that went to the mega church youth camp, and all the kids were super cool and had their cliques. And so I remember kind of starting to resent some of that and being like, oh, I have to be the good. I have to show up because otherwise no one will show up. I have to do this. And so I could kind of see that trend of like forced performance in a sense, which kind of brings me to my last question that I want to run you guys through, and that is, get ready. And that is, there's a sense of, you know, pastor's kids having seen it all. And there's, you know, an underbelly, I don't want to say like the underbelly or whatever, but that whole church experience where we're seeing a lot of young adults where they're getting disenfranchised with the church, or they're trying to redefine church, or they're just, you know, they're like, well, I don't really care about the church as a building, so I'm just going to listen to a bunch of podcasts and do a small group with my friends, and kind of a, you know, I don't care about the structure of authority or corporate worship or whatever. So talk about a little bit about, you know, whether it's what you saw. I mean, just what is there that, you know, really you had to grapple with? But then how did you understand that really God ultimately is in charge of this, and it's not something that you are going to lose your faith over? It's not something you're going to be angry and bitter at God about, you know, really coming to grips with some of the difficulties of being in church and seeing so much, but coming out of that in a sense.
You know, for me, I loved it. I mean, because when I looked at it, and I think a lot of the times when people look at the church, they think that we're a bunch of people who have it all together. And we don't. I mean, we don't.
I think I do most of the time, Evan, okay?
I know. I mean, you're an expectation. We just let that slide.
I'm an outlier.
Yeah, exactly. That's okay. But
we want to be you, Lisa.
Yes, we do. Deep down inside, we all do.
Again, the good soldier.
But you know, we're not perfect, and we struggle with this. And so, you know, there's one thing that I love to see with my dad is that he never once pretended to have it all together. He never once, if there was an issue going on within our family, we didn't try to hide stuff. He said that it would be okay if other people saw that we were struggling with stuff, because we're human, and you know, we need a savior, and we have a savior. And looking back on that, that was one of the things that got me through my fallen times, was, you know, I did backslide, and yet I knew for a fact that I could go to my parents and I could talk to them, and I had to go back to them and confess sins and go back to other people and do the same thing. But I think that if young people in the church today can see that it's okay to ask questions, it's okay to struggle with this, because the beauty of the whole thing is we have an answer, and it's Christ. But if we don't allow them to ask these questions, if we don't allow them to struggle through this stuff, we're in trouble. And so that is one thing I must thank my parents for, is establishing that in my life.
Yeah, I'd like to piggyback on that, because Evan pointed out that he really respected his dad a lot, and I haven't said that yet, but my parents were the greatest. I mean, they were very genuine, real people, and I owe everything to them in the way, and they would tell you, well, we made mistakes. Now, my dad passed away years ago, and my mom would tell you, oh, we made all kinds of mistakes. She told me that recently, but they really did it right. They didn't put too much pressure on me for who I was as a PK. They were genuine people. They were the same people at church, in the choir, behind the pulpit, teaching Sunday school, going to the nursing home, visitation, as they were at home, raising three kids and running a household and taking vacations. It was great. It was a great experience. So because they were genuine, I was comfortable. Yet, had they not been, I probably would have walked away from the faith if they weren't really living it. But they were. And that's what keeps me going now, is the seeds that they planted all those years ago.
You know, I'm the oldest of three girls, and my two younger sisters don't really go to church on a regular basis now. And part of it has been because of being burned and just things that we've seen. I mean, there were things that I struggled with that, as far as really making faith my own. It was really college when I could really say, okay, I want to make an effort to be a part of a family. And after my husband and I are got married, and we were on the other side of the fence, we're no longer in the PK life. You know, I've seen pastors themselves be mean. I've seen church people be mean. And but you know what? You don't give up on relationships, and you don't give up on the family. And there are plenty of times I've wanted to throw in the towel and say enough is enough. I am through. What I have loved about seeing my dad is his perseverance and always never giving up. My dad has been pastoring for over 40 years now, and in the past 2 years has had to be bivocational. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's very hard to see my dad have to work basically 7 days a week and put in all the hours that he does in church and visiting and still have to work another job in order to support he and his mom with medical bills and things going on. So, I remember the sweetness of church family. I remember having adoptive grandparents. I remember little old men in the back that would give me hard candy every single Sunday and would hug you and love you. And that's what church is about. It's about the family and it's about relationships. And sometimes it's really kind of sad and it's bitter sometimes, but it's the sweet moments that keeps me going.
Yep. There were people that made life hard for the pastor on some given Sundays or some given weeks or what have you. But we had a church family that really loved the pastor's family. And that was neat. I mean, that was our family, and we spent so much time at the church, but the people were really overall good to us.
Exactly.
And so those are good experiences, good memories of the church.
That's cool. We had a similar situation. My dad, too, was forced out of a church, Christy, and it was very hard. It was especially hard on my oldest sister, and she kind of bolted out of the church for a while as a result of that. And she tells me that my dad told her one day, she stormed into his office and just said, "This is ridiculous. I'm done with church. You know, I'm so tired of seeing this and everything." And he told her, he said, "You know, Laura," he said, "do not judge Christ by Christians."
Exactly.
"Christians will inevitably disappoint you, but Jesus never fails." Mm-hmm. And so we've all remembered that kind of in just him saying that, because he had took some really hard blows, I think, in that. And but he was always one who knew who he was serving first, you know, and put his priorities right and what that meant. And at his funeral, my dad died about 10 years ago, just all these people turned up that we had no idea that he had had such an impact on their lives. So that was really neat for us. So, all right, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up here. You guys, I want to thank you so much for being part of this, for being willing to share some of your own stories in the midst of this and reflect back with us. And hopefully all of you out there who are PKs will have caught a little glimpse of your own story in this, and hopefully you'll be encouraged. And all of us right now need to go and thank our pastor.
Yay, yes.
And thank their families for being in the fray and being part of a ministry that is hard but rewarding, and one that we are certainly benefiting from. So thank you all so much for being part of this.
Thank you.
On the outside, you think I'm all right. There's a smile on my face. Everything's okay. But on the inside, it's a different story. I'm stumbling down this road. I've got so far to go, and I'm a broken man on my knees again, asking for a touch from you. Lord, I need your hand to restore me. Lord, I need your mercy. Take me to the place I used to be, and use all the pain and all the hurt to do a greater work and restore me.
Well, hey, everyone. We are here for this week's culture segment, and I'm very privileged to have with me in the studio Tim Willard. Tim, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Very fun. I'm liking the sweater.
You like that?
Classy. That's good. Was that because of focus, or is that your standard issue?
This is kind of standard issue. The wife kind of gave me this as a gift for being at places where I need to be a little more professional. So.
Oh, that's good. Okay. What do you normally wear, then, when you're not professional?
A t-shirt, jeans, boots, hat. I feel kind of naked today without my hat, so if you see me kind of doing this a little bit with my hair or whatever.
Okay. You still have jeans on, though.
I still have jeans and my boots. Okay. I have to feel comfortable.
So really, you just go
this
between
is a concession,
tops.
Really.
It's got
fine, it's I'll good. Wear the tie. And
he does have a tie on. Very impressive. That's good. Well, we are here to chat with you today. It's kind of fun. You are the co-author with Jason Losey of Veneer, Living Deeply in a Surface Society.
Yes.
This is your first book, right?
This is my first, well, professionally, I do work on books with authors, but this is my first, my own book, so this is great.
It's oh, like, okay, with you, so you've ghosted.
Yeah, try not to.
We're trying, okay, yeah. We don't talk about
everybody
that.
Just scratch that from the record, but.
We can't, we maybe can't, I name, can't, those, we can't name those titles, because no. They may not, okay,
I'd
that's
to,
okay.
I'd have to kill you, and.
That's not good.
The engineer in here and whoever's listening.
Okay. Well, I was very interested in, you gave us a little bit of your backstory, which mirrors a little bit of mine. My parents were missionaries, my dad a pastor. Mm. And I don't know, you said you had you witnessed a difficult church experience when you were around 12-ish, where really a church split, where your dad kind of took a big hit through that process.
Yeah.
Similar to my family, although most of that happened prior to me being born. I'm the youngest of six kids, but my parents had a very difficult experience on the mission field that got them sent home, and then just a couple bad pastorates, like weird situations, like people who, you know, ran the church board and didn't like the way my dad did the bulletin, and so created a lot of trouble with that.
Yes.
So I resonated with that, and you really kind of took a departure from the church, big C, and kind of had a lot of bitterness towards it. Mm. Talk to us a little bit about that experience as far as, you know, in a formative way, and kind of where that drove you in your perception of the church.
Yeah, so when I was 12, my dad had a small church. Actually, he started the church when I was 3, so we were there like 10 years. Mm. He grew it from our living room to, you know, meeting in a school, then building a building. The church was growing, and then, you know, at that time, and like this is like 1980, 81, you know, that church of, you know, 150, 200, 250 getting bigger. You know, some people wanted to go a different direction and get even bigger, right? Hmm. So it's kind of common, I guess. You know, being there and being 11 years old and then hearing my dad, overhearing elders talking to my dad in harsh tones. One time I was walking in the back of the church and I saw Mr. Warner in the bathroom with my dad talking to my dad. It looked like from what I saw as a boy, seeing him kind of berate my dad a little bit, just kind of my dad's head down and, you know, that kind of stuff sticks with you. I loved Mr. Warner. I swam in his pool, right? And then, you know, it was only months later then, you know, my dad informed us that we were moving to Pennsylvania, that he had been voted out. And the church ended up, you know, the people who wanted to go somewhere and be even bigger, they kind of split off after that. And the church, you know, sadly kind of didn't really do much after that. It still exists today, and we still know some people at that church, and it's great. But what my experience in that was pretty harsh. I mean, taking everything I knew as a boy, and my dad, who I knew served them, probably, and you're probably familiar with this too, like their whole life is serving the people in the church, and yet they want to kind of go this way and treat my dad this way. I'm like, I didn't understand why my dad would want to serve those people. And so I didn't understand, you know, why he was doing this with God, and why would God allow this to happen? 12-year-old thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those thoughts manifested to me or in me even through middle school and then through high school. And then, you know, I was prototypical, a preacher's kid in high school, but I lived, you know, relating to Veneer, I kind of lived both lives, right? Football field, you know, I talked like this. Mm-hmm. And in youth group, being youth group leader, I talked like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I lived those both lives. And, you know, being, I guess, the quote-unquote hellion as the PK, you know, very stereotypical. But I, you know, for me, my rejection and how things kind of grew to a boiling point was I just was angry at God, and I was angry at the church, and I didn't really want anything with it. And the institutionalized church authority never sat right with me since then.
Mm-hmm.
And then that all kind of came to a head, and I don't want to get ahead of our conversation here, but that kind of came to a head when I when I left high school and went to Liberty University, and then I was there for a year and a half, got kicked out.
Yeah, which first of all is even wacky that you went there. I mean, that's kind of like, right? Obviously that must have been some kind of battle, or did you owe your dad something or whatever? Because
no.
I mean, honestly.
No.
Okay, you went willingly.
Well, I mean, where else am I going to go? I mean, I'm a I'm a PK. I really haven't thought about it. I really didn't think about it. I wanted to play volleyball. I played volleyball in high school.
Okay.
They had a volleyball team. It was a growing team. And I'm like, I'm going to go there and do that.
Okay.
So I went there. My sister was there. So there was familiarity. It was a big school, you know, football team, all that stuff. So I didn't really give it any thought. Just went to the school. It was the Christian, quote unquote, thing to do, right? I didn't want to go to this.
You know, DC Talk went there. So
yeah. And they, I think one of them got kicked out too. I was there for almost a year and a half and got caught at a party and was asked to leave after a series of other events, like I tried to stay and all these things. But everything kind of came to a head. People ask me even now, it's fun to tell the story now a little bit. When you're 19, it's not really that fun. I mean, here I am back a week early for Thanksgiving break. And, people were like, well, what are you doing here? And you have to tell them. And, yes, I was at a party. Yes, there's, alcohol at a party. But that's not why I got kicked out. I would tell you right now that it was a manifestation of bitterness. And I was, kind of, to use appropriate language here, just trying to, shrugging off the church.
Mm-hmm.
I want nothing to do with you, kind of a deal. And this is how my life reflected that, mm-hmm. right? And so I just kind of, that span of time of being at Liberty, a year and a half, and even my last year of high school was just kind of like, it's all about me. And maybe I could play the facade of someone who is, a Christian, quote unquote. I said the prayer, but it didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. So jumping back a little bit in this experience, did you ever talk to your dad about what he went through and how it affected the family and what his perspective was on it? And then how that translated, what then is his take on you getting kicked out of school? Does he have to go back and say, okay, what happened to Tim? What, crazy stuff played into this? And
That's a really good question. Leaving, I don't remember when we left Florida, and that church is in Florida, went to Pennsylvania. I don't remember talking really about that thing or even talking to him about my feelings. I do remember saying when I was like 11 and 12 years old, telling him about how I felt about what authority and like, well, I remember saying he was talking about something that was church related. I'm like, well, you believe that, Dad, but that doesn't mean I have to. And this is what's really beautiful about my father. All growing up and even now as a man, he has never been this kind of guy who's been like, this is how you should think and this is a decision you need to make. It was always like, what is the Lord telling you? And I see in hindsight a lot of my dad kind of just allowing me to be on that path and not really messing with it. And I'm sure he went through a lot of hurt and the whole thing, but we didn't verbalize that together. And we have a very communicative family. And I'm one of five, by the way. So there's a lot of fun things going on in that family, but we never really talked about it.
What then in your experience, I mean, obviously you had that experience as a child, then you moved to Pennsylvania, you now, I think completed your MA in Christian thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of
just
like
recently.
You're a church guy now, we can officially label you. What is a right perspective on the church? Like for young adults who kind of come from this approach, either they grew up in a super churched environment or they grew up totally unchurched and there's all this, are you fundamentalist? Are you emergent? Mm. Are you, what are you? How do we really form a right biblical perspective on the church?
Excellent question. I'm kind of passionate about that, really. I kind of left the church in my mind. I mean, I still had to go as a high schooler, right? Then in college, never went. And then even as still finding my faith in my 20s, was still reticent to kind of engage, right? But as I kept learning and especially recently getting a degree in church history and Christian thought, seeing where our faith comes from, I grew to really, the church is about Christ, the body of Christ. And when you kind of emphasize that and de-emphasize these other things, the American church is big on methodologies, whether it's missional or attractional or like you said, emergent, whatever it is, we're big on those things. And we can, sometimes we polarize one another from, I'm missional and I'm this, or you're not, you need to be this. I think for me, focusing on Christ really helped center me. And it wasn't I was getting theology from a Calvinist perspective or this or that or whatever method. It was like, what would Christ do here? And really studying the scriptures for myself. And I had baggage, right? And a lot of us have baggage. I have friends who, we're in our 30s, we have baggage of fundamentalism and evangelicalism. And it's like, what do you do with that? I would really encourage people to try to deal with your baggage. I mean, I dealt with it. It kind of came to a head for me at Liberty, right? Getting kicked out of school and facing some things I was just angry about, right? And it took some confession, right? It takes some submission. It took me finally breaking, and it was a big pride wall for me to say, you know what, I need to be submitted to this. And it's not about the institutionalized church. It's about a relationship with Christ and then also a relationship with the believers. Mm-hmm. And so when I began to see it like that, I kind of started seeing, I think, how my father sees it. Like, the reason why he could serve those people back in Florida is because he loved them as the body of Christ. And he wasn't there to exert some kind of power or whatever there. He was there to serve them. And I'm like, now when I see the church, my role as a brother in Christ, even with you in this interview, is like to serve you. How can I serve you in this? And, you know, likewise as my sister, right?
Mm-hmm. And I'll come up with a list. I'm going to write it down. I'll give you some ideas. It's all good.
So, I mean, I think maybe we need to spend some time getting rid of baggage. I think that's a big deal. I mean, going into starting to get married and, you know, moving from, you know, single to married stuff to whatever, if you go into that with baggage, then you have we're starting to have kids now, whatever, and you're thinking about how your kids are going to be formed. And if I still had a lot of that baggage and that bitterness and hate, I would be it'd be weird to go to church and, you know, just a weird tension with my kids. Like, it's not meaningful for me. How's it going to be meaningful for them?
Right. Well, and too, I mean, I think we look back, and I talked with Craig Rochelle about this when I interviewed him for the show, just of how, you know, we can't completely disregard the Hudson Taylors, the Jim Elliots, the Jerry Falwells, the other people who would be labeled as more, you know, old school Christianity or fundamentalists or whatever. I mean, I think God used them, from what I can tell, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, I think it is a disservice to us when we get a little too sexy with our Christianity and start being like, oh, no, I got to be awesome, or I got to be, you know, I'm going to be super. I'm going to, you know, I think it's just it gets a little ridiculous, which makes me want to move into you writing Veneer. And of course, I said already you co-authored this with Jason Losey. And now, did you guys just sit around, because this kind of plays into what you're talking about, obviously, your own upbringing. I mean, did you just sit around and say, wow, dude, you know, people are really fake, and so let's write a book about how fake people are, especially Christians. Oh my goodness, we're so fake. And I think it's, you know, it's something where we all recognize, you know, we've all sat in those Christian, you know, seminars or whatever, where we talk about masks and all that kind of stuff. And, and so we understand that. But let's talk a little bit about the push and pull. And I want you to explain this, of we either err on one side or the other, I think, of saying, okay, well, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm a Christian. I'm pretty good. And all these people out there are just massively screwed up. Mm-hmm. Or it's the opposite of, wow, I understand how other people are imperfect, but why do I have such this crazy standard for myself? And I never measure up, and I never. Where's the balance in that, about understanding what it means to be real and imperfect, but not judging others in the process of that, as far as, you know, well, you're unsalvageable or you're whatever?
Man, that's tough.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, I figured now that you have the MA in Christian thought, I thought I could go there.
Yeah. How can I phrase this? I guess we started the book as, you know, we grew up in the 90s, right, in high school. So there's a lot of grunge music in this feeling and this sentiment. And it started out as this big reaction to that. And yeah, we were like, yeah, you Christians are this way. But even more so, it's like it's a cultural thing where we try to hide or whatever. So it was, especially from my perspective, and my upbringing plays into this, it was a finger pointing towards people. And it could have been a middle finger towards culture and the church. Looking at that, and even talking through how we respond to what's going on in the church, for example. And like you just said about these men, we can't discount these men for what they have done. I totally agree with that. So once we started talking about it, dialoguing about it, reading on it, even talking with friends about it, we stepped back a little bit and we said, you know what, in order to write about this for real, we've got to talk about it in our own lives and be real about that. So it started as a finger pointing, and then I think it came back to be more reflective and going, how have we dealt with this, and how can we be a positive catalyst to kind of change that? So does that kind of get into the question a little bit?
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, I think too, and you guys talk in the book a lot about, you know, this whole reality TV culture and the 15 minutes of fame and just kind of where people are getting their identities from. And it's so crazy, and how, you know, it is difficult to form real relationships anymore. And it's difficult to get to know people because, you know, I get to know a lot about people on Facebook, but maybe it's just not enough, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes it seems like, you know, that we put too much time and energy towards that. So, but where, what's the balance then, especially in the church, because we're brought into these small groups and we're supposed to emote and we're supposed to share all this stuff. Where's the balance between being uber fake and not being willing to open up and be both transparent and vulnerable? And then just totally TMI and people just using the church and using these people as like,
Yeah, well, it's discernment. And we actually were talking about this morning where you can overshare and then not share anything. And a lot of that, I think, is being confident in who you are in Christ. And when we talked about this concept of veneer, it came back to who we are before Christ. And what is lacking, I think, in a lot of in Christianity and a lot of people in general is that they don't know who they are. And so we talk about that early on in the book, like people are kind of lost. And the reason why we're on Facebook or going to small groups or on Twitter or whatever is because we're wired to be that way. I don't think it's wrong to have a Facebook profile or to be on Twitter necessarily. It is how we use them and steward that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a stewardship standpoint. But it's also, we have to, for sharing and oversharing kind of things, that is a discernible thing. But it's emblematic of something deeper inside of us. So there is something that we need to share, maybe learning how to share it and when is too much and not enough. Now, the small group thing, that's kind of a weird thing for me to even talk about because we're in this kind of postmodern thing where it's, hey, let me talk about my feelings and everything is okay. And we're not leading people through something. We're just kind of emoting. Mm-hmm. This is a separate discussion probably, but I do believe we need a little more direction in those kinds of things where you're not just able to sit there and just blubber about whatever. Mm-hmm. That might be, I guess if you need that, then maybe, you know, go out for coffee with some friends and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if we're there as a support...
Or host a show.
Okay.
That works for some of us. I'm just saying.
You know what I mean? So do that there. And then in small groups, we're trying to like kind of grow closer, not only to one another, but Christ. And this comes back to the deficiency we have as far as our identity in Christ. Mm-hmm. Let's concentrate on that. And I think we'll start gaining confidence in ourselves to kind of share and to kind of know too, as the Spirit leads, what we can and cannot share.
Mm-hmm. So what about the concept that, you know, because I know there are different schools of thought out there. One says, you know, the Bible is totally sufficient. It's all you need. Just go to the scriptures, go to the scriptures, just go to the Lord, you know, put it at the foot of the cross. You know, I've heard that. But then other people are like, no, then you need to find these safe people. And I'm like, okay, who are these safe people? How do you find them? What do you need safe people? Yeah. What do you need safe people for versus what don't you need, you know, and when is, you know, and I guess it gets into, maybe this is a whole separate discussion. It gets into that whole counseling dynamic of, you know, those who approve of counseling versus not versus like, who can you be real with, especially in our day and age, and how do you find them?
I think you should be intentional about it. Jason and I are friends, obviously. We wrote this together, and we probably have a group of just a few people that we would share very intimate and close things with, right? Mm-hmm. And we have a group, and we talk about it in the book, too, where we have been meeting with our pastor every Thursday for years and our worship leader, and that has become a very brotherly group and where it's safe to share those. Mm-hmm. So you do have to be intentional about it. We can overproduce this kind of thing, right? For example, and I'm here actually visiting Focus here, but my family lives, I have some family who live in Lyons, and I'll be spending time with them. But my brother-in-law there, we used to ride mountain bikes together. And we used to have the best talks on our bikes where we just would open up. And so there's a trust thing there, and we're friends. It's not like we're going to sit down in a group, you know, I've known you for a few, now I maybe because I'm a chatty Cathy, I can do this. mm-hmm. Most people probably wouldn't have the faith and trust in somebody to entrust you with my feelings on this or my deficiencies, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're intentional about creating relationships, and we talk about this in the book, those are emblematic of our faith as well. And trust is gained first, and then we can start sharing those things. So I don't know, like in a group setting, I think, I mean, maybe there's one level, but then seeking those times where you have friends, you're developing friends and pouring into those one, two or three people to really go deep with. Hmm. And I think Christ models that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good thoughts, Tim. And this is just obviously a start to the discussion. Would encourage y'all to go and get Veneer again. Veneer, Living Deeply in a Surface Society by Timothy Willard and Jason Losey. though I call him Tim. I've known him now for 10 minutes. So,
oh, yeah.
So he's Tim. But yeah, definitely check out the book. Thank you so much for being part of the conversation. Where can folks find out? I mean, you're a writer, you're a speaker, you're a dad, husband now.
Yes.
Where can people find more info?
More info on the book, you can go to endveneer.com. And Endveneer actually is also on Twitter, at Endveneer. I actually just released my first author site. It's timothywillard.com, and I'm like a week old into Twitter, all right?
Okay.
So this is a big step for me, right?
Okay.
So it's at Timothy Willard as well. So.
Okay. We'll tweet about your interview here, and we'll get you out there.
Let's do it.
So sounds good. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Well, hello, everyone. We're opening up this week's inbox, and I'm very privileged to have Glenn Lutyens in the studio with me. Hey, Glenn.
Lisa, good to be with you.
Good to be with you. Glenn's kind of our jack-of-all-trades counselor. I know you've dealt with, what, alcohol before? What are some of your other topics we throw at you?
I can't even remember. Relationships, marriage, premarital kind of stuff.
Yeah, you've run the gamut with us, so that's great. And we have another kind of different one for you today that kind of touches on a couple different areas, and I'll go ahead and read it, and we'll see what you have to say.
Okay.
This listener says, as a pastor's daughter, I feel like guys are intimidated by my family and who my dad is. I find that they react differently to a pastor's daughter, so I've stopped telling guys about what my dad does. It's worked, but it doesn't satisfy me. What is your advice?
Well, maybe part of the reason why it's not as satisfying as you'd like is because you feel like you're withholding something. You're not being as transparent and truthful as you'd like. And it sounds like you want to be transparent in regards to relationships, but just concerned that this comes into, it creates a problem. One of the things that I think might be helpful for you to do is for you to be able to create the context. When the question is asked, what does your dad do, what do your parents do, and you respond, well, he's a pastor, then, in a sense, all of the images that a person may have come to mind. What you might do is you might consider maybe 5 to 7 words that would describe your dad. Words that might be a bit outside the box when it comes to people's image of what a pastor is, but qualities that are true of your dad, qualities that are strengths of your dad, that you can say, well, let me tell you a little bit about my dad. So you're setting the context of their understanding of who your dad is. And then there's kind of the, oh, by the way, my dad is a pastor. But you're the one who, in a sense, is in control of that. And I think that that might help kind of reshape maybe some of the responses, some of the impression that some of the guys have. Now, if in one sense these guys are not all that interested because your dad is a pastor, that may not be the worst thing in the world to know that up front.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things which help kind of screen out individuals that may not be the wisest choice as far as a partner. So if some are just not interested, no matter how you communicate who your dad is, that might be good to know up front as opposed to sometime down the road where it becomes a lot more difficult to move back in the relationship.
Yeah, that's good. It kind of reminds me of how we jokingly say here at Focus on the Family, you know, when Dr. Dobson was here, like how in the world would Danae, his daughter, ever get married? Because who wants to date the daughter of Dr. Dobson? And there is kind of some, you know, I think with pastors, there's that kind of, do I measure up? What is this going to look like?
Right.
Do you think maybe, Glenn, it would also be helpful for this girl to introduce guys to her dad in more of a casual setting where he's not the pastor, but he's just my dad, or he's just a normal guy who wants to get to know this guy, you know, maybe to just do something social or recreational, you know, to kind of get him to know on that front. Is that an appropriate bridge to make?
Well, I think that certainly is, because that, again, reframes it in a way that the guy can understand who her dad is, not as pastor first and foremost, but as dad, as a man who enjoys maybe laughter, enjoys having fun, and can be seen as a normal guy.
Yeah, and has made mistakes. You know, I mean, if her dad is willing to admit that and kind of share some of his own experiences and what he's learned, I think that could go a long way, too.
So, absolutely.
Good thoughts. Well, thanks so much, Glenn, for weighing in on that. Hopefully this will be helpful to you, our listener, as well as anyone else out there that has struggled with this in the past. That is it for this week's show. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. And, you know, no question is too big or too small, and we try to answer a lot of them on the show, but we will certainly if you have a question, get it to our help center so you can get a personal response, if anything. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.